Hello and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. So I've been fairly sick recently, so I haven't recorded one of these in a while. And when I did record, I recorded sick. But now that I'm on some heavy duty prescription drugs, I seem to be getting a little bit better. I have asthmatic bronchitis, so it was hard for me to breathe. But now, with a lot of steroids and cough medicine and such, I seem to be on the upswing. Had Micah from Geek Brunch. He was a member quite a while ago. I guess it has been a year or so he's been away, maybe longer, ever since he took his trip to Japan. Well, him and his wife Claire came and visited for the weekend, and we got to do a lot of touristy things. And one of them was to go to the Pikes Peak, and we've been there several times with friends and such, but we've taken the train up there, but the train is no longer functional. So Barb drove us to the top, which was quite the adventure, because it's got a lot of switchbacks and you're going at a steep incline. At one point, it looks like you're driving into the sky. Because there's nothing but cliff. But it probably wasn't such a good idea to go up there with asthmatic bronchitis, because after about an hour, I almost passed out at the altitude, which is, it's like over 14,000 feet. So it is harder to breathe. And when we first got there, I didn't really notice it. But man, after a while, it was really rough. And we did a lot of hiking, Garden of the Gods. We must have hiked about 7 miles that way. And yeah, it was kind of rough as far as my chest goes. But and I wasn't improving, so that's why I went back to the doctor. And I hope after after today is the first day I've taken stuff, and I started to feel at least my lungs, which was the most important part. It feels like I could take a deep breath again. Before, I was taking like these small, shallow breaths, and if I tried to take a deep breath, I'd start coughing, and it was rough. But now I think I'm finally on the upswing. Still coughing, but at least I could take like a deep breath, which is something I was lacking in like for 3 weeks. And finally, I think I could take a deep breath, which is good. So, this is, I think, like week two or three. Week two, where I decided to cut back on. And man, I tell you, it's tough because I go to the bathroom, and that's where I have my previews, and I look at all the stuff that I'm passing on. So the way I did it is I made this like list of things that I wanted, but I'm not going to get. And I'm still holding strong. The only thing I broke, I'm finding the hardest things for me to get rid of are not the independence, but the Marvel. It is tough. And I caved on one book. I didn't cave on Amazing Spider-Man, which is it's borderline. Like that's the one book that's giving me anxiety. But I did cave on Captain America, because I just had to stick with the, because I own almost every volume and I just couldn't break it. So, of all the titles that I put on the list, the only one that I added back in was Captain America. And then there was one book that I was missing that I even forgot about, but it arrived in my shipment. It was Halo Jones from Rebellion. I think that was Alan Moore and David Gibbons, and I went ahead and added the second volume to that. So those are the only two things that I really added, and there's a list of about, gee, 35 things that I didn't. The other thing is, it's hard to break something like when you're you have an entire line, like a Vault, Scout, Aftershock. Up to this point, I've had everything, and now I'm breaking it. So it's a weird, unusual feeling. And the new previews came out today, and it's tough. But I'm trying to stick to the plan. I know it's weird. It's weird for me to say that even though some of the independents are 5 out of 5, that I'm more concerned about the big two. Well, DC is unaffected, so it's not an issue. But Marvel, I am really cutting back on. And the next previews has, well, FF is going to be safe. Like, I can't break my FF, so that. But there's a few titles in there that are very, very, very tempting. So, and I bet you I know what's going to happen psychologically is I'm going to go to the store, my, because I buy all my DC proper. When I say proper, the main line of superhero stuff at the comic shop. I don't get it through DCBS. I go to the comic shop, get those up weekly. I haven't been there in 2 weeks because of guests have been visiting and I've been sick. And today I went, and I was going to pick up 2 weeks' worth of stuff, but then it said, "Sorry, our credit card machine is broken and won't be fixed until Saturday." And I'm like, "Damn it, I can't get my books." But I went in and I got my previews, and I had a good discussion with the shop owner because he had was talking about Amazing Spider-Man. What is it, 800 or whatever number it's at right now, and he had all kinds of covers, and you know, he had a lot of them bundled, like you could buy a bundle of covers, and I said, "Shit, man, you must have like over 1,000 copies of this sucker," and he said, "Yeah, he did," and so he's got like, I think he has like 5 long boxes full of Amazing Spider-Man, plus everything that he put on the shelf, plus the one in 500s and the one in 100s, and the I think he sold the one in 1,000. But there was really one guy driving it. Like, he was said he wanted everything, like two of everything, and I think his bill came to like almost $3,000. No, it was like $2,800. And he threw in like two things for free. And that covered like the bulk of it, but he told me the total cost was like 5,000 something for just one fucking title. I can't imagine like being a shop owner and then if people just didn't follow through with these promises to buy these variant covers, how devastating it could be to a small time shop owner. It sounds like he's gonna recoup his 3 grand, but then they threw more covers at it, and then he spent another 2 grand on covers, and that's iffy. And then he's gotta worry about like, oh, how? Okay, now I have 5 long boxes of freaking Amazing Spider-Man 800. How the hell do I get rid of that? And I think it is Amazing Spider-Man 800. It's either that or 900. I can't remember. I lost track of the numbering. A matter of fact, I should be bringing up my comic base, and I'll look it up. 'Cause it drives me nuts when I'm listening to a podcast, and they're like, "Oh yeah, the Dark Knights reminds me of a writer that wrote Final Crisis," and then they don't know the name of the guy. It's like Grant Morrison, God damn it! Drives me crazy. And they even mentioned Grant Morrison. They said, "No, that's not it." And I'm like, "Come on, man." So I'll make sure that I get you the right Amazing Spider-Man. And I looked at a lot of the covers, and yeah, I wasn't too impressed, to tell you the truth. There was one guy that said there was a little ding in the cover and he didn't want it. And I swear to you, this is like a minor ding. I wouldn't have even noticed it unless I really went across the spine of the book. But I guess what the lesson of this is variants are alive and very well because a lot of people are dishing out buku bucks. I think he was offering like a $70 bundle for, it was like nine covers. I can't remember. But that didn't have any of the, sorry about that, of the variants. Like, I mean, the one in 500s, the one in 50s, it didn't have it. It's just regular. And then he said he's gonna do the same thing for Spider-Man number one. But what I was getting to is I'll probably crack. I mean, if I crack on anything, it'll be Amazing Spider-Man number one and two that come out that month. That's on my list. And I don't know how to explain it, but I'm trying to stay strong. I figure if I could get like 3 months in, that it'll be, I'll be over it. Like, I'll adjust. The other thing that's hard for me to do is another thing I did is on variant covers. I'm obsessed with Red Sonja covers. Like, I want all of them. I don't want just two. And I've tried to reduce it to two. And then they came out with the Dynamite came out with the Elvira number one covers, and they all look beautiful. Like, I want every single one of them, but I eliminated it to two. And on the Red Sonja, I always get the cosplay because I like the cosplay covers of, people dressed like Red Sonja. And then I have to pick, like, out of six covers, which one I like, and it's tough. And with the Elvira one, oh God, I liked them all. I wish I could have got them all of them, but I reduced it to two. So I still am doing some stuff. But even though I made cuts, I am still spending more money a month than anyone I know, than anyone. I'm probably more than the entire Nerdy Legion. So, yeah, I reduced, but I'm still getting a shitload of books, a ton of books. And I don't know what, I don't, I kind of have a target of where I want to be. And if I could slowly get there through attrition, which means the company's canceling titles on their own, then it'll be the easiest, I think. But yeah, we'll see. It is tough. There's a lot of good stuff. And I did pick out a few number ones that I am getting, and there was a couple of horror genre books that I wanted to try. Some Cullen Bunn, and then there was one in Xenoscope something. I enjoyed the Xenoscope book that they just came out with, which was like The Hills Have Eyes. And I wanted to try this new one that's like it's like a Club Paradise thing, but it's like a horror book, and I wanted to check it out. Let's see what they have for 800. Yeah, it's 800. I was right. I can't imagine all these covers. Most of them have images. Ooh, that Jace, these J. Scott Campbell ones are fucking beautiful. Those are the ones I want. Our shop owner doesn't have those, but there's like a J. Scott Campbell Red Goblin variant. There's a Dr. Octopus variant. A Gwen Stacy's beautiful. The Green Goblin looks amazing. There's a Venom that looks all right. A Black Cat that looks pretty cool. A Mary Jane, I love it. I gotta go see if there's any of these are available. And then the Spider-Man, it looks really solid. It lists them for. Wow, there's a Clayton Crane for 175 in my database. Holy shit. Yeah, some of these are crazy expensive. And I was wondering if they, I haven't bought a an Overstreet. I try to buy one every 10 years. I haven't bought one in a while, and I was always wondering, because typically they don't do variants, they just do straight covers. So I was wondering if anybody could tell me on the new Overstreets if they are listing variants now, or if they're very selective on what they put as a variant. And I don't just mean, I know they do like newsstand versus direct market stuff, but I mean like cover A, cover B, cover C, cover D kind of thing. So yeah, I'd be very, very curious to see how that went. And you can see with Spider-Man, they just play these renumbering games all the freaking time. So we'll see. Like 600. And then it goes to 700. I just wish it would just keep using legacy numbers. I wish Marvel would have their Action Comics and Detective, like Amazing Spider-Man, and some titles that you always know will be around. It would be kind of cool. I noticed with the latest batch of comics that came in, it was it Venom or what was it? I can't remember the. Oh, it was Black Panther. It was Black Panther number one, the one that he goes where into space, and it had a legacy number underneath the one, and I wonder how long that'll last. They've done something similar to that in the past, but it didn't last very long. But I think it would be very, very cool if they kept that, at least for our archivists like myself and people that archive their comics, just to have that legacy number. I think it'd be pretty awesome. I'd even be satisfied if they kept the legacy number off the cover and put it in the little title blurb in the first page or the last page where they put the title. I would be satisfied with that. And last but not least, I thought it would be interesting to talk about comic book like friends that I had prior to internet, which is very little. But like I mentioned in the past, we didn't have a lot of money. My dad got me into comic books by taking me to the garbage dump, and we'd find these boxes that had they were untarnished with trash because they were sealed, and they had all kinds of comics, and these boxes were pretty huge. And you'd open them up, and they were pretty nice copies of everything, except they'd have half the cover ripped off because they used to rip off half the cover and send it back for some kind of refund from the publisher. And but as far as the story, it was all intact. And I started reading comics that way, and it was grade school. I think it was first or second grade. I started taking comics. We used to have like a half-hour reading session where you could read whatever you wanted, and they wanted you to read novels, but I didn't want to read novels. I wanted to read comic books. So I'd take in comic books, these comics that had the covers ripped off, and I actually got an award for getting kids to read at that young age, because people didn't want to read books at that time either. They wanted to read comic books. So the teacher, and thanks to the teacher, she allowed that, but it got a lot of kids wanting to read because they were comic books, and then they had the pictures, and they wanted to know what the characters were saying. So they wanted to read. And there's a lot of good writing in those comic books, and there's a lot of big words. That was grade six, or not grade six, that was grade one or two. It was right after kindergarten. And at that time, a lot of kids read comics, but nobody would collect comics. You would fold them up, read them, and then trash them, unless they were me. I wouldn't do it. But I would trade them. I did when I did earn allowance and I had an extra 20 cents or whatever it was at the time. I would buy comics, but they're a few and far between. And it was usually war comics like Sergeant Rock or GI Combat. And then me and my friend, who played a lot of army men, would trade these comics and just read through them. And we'd also trade them. There was a friend. I'm not going to mention his name because I don't think he wants me to. I don't know if he does, but he had this suitcase of comics that he would bring in. And this was probably around fifth grade, maybe it was fourth grade. And it was loaded with 12 cent comics. Like his dad had given him, handed all these comics down to him. And we would trade for him, but at that time, comics were like 30 cents, or they were somewhere between 25 and 30 cents, maybe 35 cents. And when you're a kid, you look at these older comics and you're like, these suck. The art style was different, you know? I mean, yeah, now I look at Ditko art and I think it's badass, but when I was comparing like Buscema art with Ditko, I was like, oh, that looks not that good. But he had, I mean, this is how stupid I am, because I had a lot of comics. I could have had like Tales from First Appearance Iron Man, First Appearance Cap, First Appearance of a lot of these characters, probably even Amazing Fantasy 15. And a lot of these books went through, I read them and then I traded them. And if I would have just kept them at that time, I would have been so much better shape. And I do own a lot of them now. I don't have the first Iron Man, but I have the first I have Iron Man number one, and that was part of what he had, and Captain America 100. But he had all that Tales of Suspense, Tales to Astonish, so a lot of the first appearance, he had Hulk number one through five, all kinds of crap. But that's what we did as kids. We'd roll these comic backs up, read the shit out of them, and then trade them. And the trading was done so you could read as many as you possibly can. He did a lot of things. We played marbles and we read a lot of comic books. And then in middle school, so that one guy, I didn't follow him too much when I went to middle school, but he went to middle school and high school with me. And I am friends with him on Facebook, but we're not close at all. But another friend, so I kind of would just get comics intermittently. I'd go to the drugstore, which was, I don't know, it was about 3/4 of a mile away, maybe half a mile. And I'd go there occasionally, maybe once every 2 weeks, and I'd buy two or three comics. But in middle school, I met this one guy. We were both geeks, and I went to his house. He lived in the same neighborhood, but not down my street. He lived like, I don't know, three roads away. And I went into his house, and he had long boxes, and I was like, "What the fuck are these? I don't know what these are." And that's, he says, that's where I store my comics. And then he had bags and boards, and I'm like, "You could collect these things?" And I went through the boxes, and I was like, "Holy crap, he's got Marvel Fanfare. What the hell is Marvel Fanfare?" And he's got like one, two, three, four, all in sequential order. And I was like, his name is Mike. I'm not gonna tell you his last name, but I said, "Mike, where the hell do you get these things?" And he said, "I get them from Don's Paperback Book Exchange." And I'm like, "What is that?" And he goes, "They get new comic books there all the time, and you could go there." And I got my parents to go there, and then I never went to the drugstore ever again. I started going to Don's. whenever I could, whenever I'd mow lawns or whatever, I started mowing. I started learning that in order to buy comics, you have to have money. And the only way I could get money is to do neighborhood type chores. So I'd go to every house and I'd mow their lawn, and I'd get 10 bucks here, 20 bucks here, 5 bucks here, depending on the size of their lawn. And then I'd save all that money, and then I'd get my parents to drive me to this place, and it was far, like it wasn't even walking distance. And it still exists today, although they don't deal in comic books there. I do visit it with my father-in-law, and 'cause he trades in his paperback books. And it still exists, and they do have a warehouse, and they send me emails every now and then for like these, but this is in Albuquerque. They send me these emails saying you could come to our warehouse, we're having a huge sale, but I can never make it down there for the particular days that they open the warehouse up so I can see what they got. Sorry. But anyway, that's when I discovered comic book stores, and Mike has introduced me to them. And I had several geek friends that would read comic books, but it was mostly that Mike guy, and we talk about him. There was two or three other guys, but they were the more of the casual fan. And then in high school, I pretty much, I think it was high school, like early high school, I switched from Don's Paperback Book Exchange to a place called Nostalgia / Tall Tales. It was originally called Nostalgia, and then it became Tall Tales, and it was on Wyoming. It was the street it was on, and I started to get my pull list there, and that's when I was getting, pulls. I didn't have a pull list at Don's Paperback Book Exchange. I would just go and get titles every month. And he usually kept it pretty stocked, so if I missed a book, I could go. He'd have like the older issue in the back of that one, and he had some. He actually had like a table full of back issues, and that's where I completed like my Champions, and I started my Defenders and titles that I didn't really know about, and I started buying back issues there. But then I went to Nostalgia, and I liked it there. There was a guy there. He was kind of like a hippie looking guy, and I liked him a lot. His name was Dave. And he had this huge red beard, and he had a cocaine nail. And he was just the nicest guy. I would get all my books. He treated me good. I had a discount. I'd order from Previews or Capital magazine. I'd buy them both, I think, at the time. I'd go in, get my books. Everything was copacetic. I liked it there a lot. And then this New York guy came, and I forget what that guy's name is. And he almost took over the shop, and I don't know what happened to Dave. He kind of like pushed him out. And at then I started noticing I was missing comics. That I had pre-ordered, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And these were books that were hot. So what he would do is if he under-ordered, he would take shit out of my box and then put a $10 price tag on it and then sell it immediately and then say, oops, I didn't get it for you. That's what he started doing. And I'm like, well, fuck that. Okay. So around college time, I was working two jobs plus a full-time student, and I was working as a like a co-op or intern doing database work. And there was a place called, what was it called? Doc's News, and it was right outside my work. And it was a really unique shop. I mean, there was two guys there. There was a guy that was like a rocker. I forget what his name is. And then there was another guy. He was pretty big, but all I remember from him is that he loved like milk and cheese. I mean, anything that was like satire and stuff, he would just like you gotta read this, you gotta read this. That's what I remember about him. And this shop had old issues and it had all the new stuff, and this is the time that Valiant and Malibu and stuff was coming out, and I was buying all of it, and I had a pull list there, and it was right next to my work, so I get to visit it as often as I wanted to, which was, I worked there 3 days a week, I think, and then in the summer it was 5 days a week, and then I worked at McDonald's on the weekends. I had a pull list there, and I liked what they were doing. And it was a weird shop, though. They had like porn. It was one of those. They had those saloon doors, and they had like a porn rental in the back, and that was kind of interesting. And they had porn comics like that. My first porn comic was a comic book called Rambaugh. I remember it because it was like a takeoff of Rambo. And I did get that, and it was nasty. Boy, was it nasty. But while I was going to Doc's News, I remember around the time frame was the death of Superman and Batman breaking his back and stuff like that. 'Cause I remember those books were hot, and I bought sometimes two, three copies. And there was a couple times that I had extra, and there are people that walked in and said, "I don't have a copy." And I said, "I'll sell it to you for $10." And then I would get it, sell it right there at the store. And, 'cause sometimes I would put in my pull list, I wanted two of, so one I could, if it was polybagged, I could use some scissors and cut open the top and read a copy, and then one I could just leave in the plastic and not ever have to open it. And I would do that with the card books and stuff like that. And after Doc's News, I think it was going out of business, I went back to Tall Tales because it was really sort of my only option at the time. And that's when I And at during this time, like high school, like I didn't really share my love of comics with anybody, but my basketball geek friends knew I loved comics. And the reason they knew is because they'd come into my room. My room was covered with posters. Like you couldn't even see the ceiling. It had Spider-Man posters. I had like these flannel the I forget what they call them, but they were like flannel posters. They were actually out of cloth, and they had like this little circular doile that would put on, and then you'd hang some string from the doile, and they were all over my room. And then my closets were covered with the Marvel stickers all over, and the back of my door was as well. And so my friends. They were good friends because basketball was our life. And basketball, like during this time, I couldn't read many comics because you go to school, we'd have six period. This is from freshman all the way to junior, senior, because I quit when I was a senior. I quit when I was a senior. Basketball was one of the hardest things I had to do, but it was so much work. And the coach said, I was only 5'2". He pretty much told me, at the beginning of the senior year, he says, "I'm not gonna cut you," because he cut my friends. Like my neighborhood was either a year older than me or a year younger, like my real close neighborhood friends, and not really the same age. So my best friend, which we read Sergeant Rock and stuff, he was a year older than me. And he was in basketball too, and we played point guard and stuff like that. And he got cut the year, he made a senior, and he I guess the coach regretted it, and he said, "I'm not gonna cut you, but I'm not gonna guarantee you any playing time." And I knew how much work it was, and I knew I might never ever get to play, and I decided to quit. And it was a big, big decision, but I think things worked out for the best. But my friends, my basketball friends, they knew because they'd come into my room and they're like, "What the hell? You got all these comics?" And I knew they read some of them too because my neighborhood friend, the one that lived in back of me, was a year younger, and he would take care of our houses when we go on these vacations in the summertime. And he was on the basketball team 1 year younger than me. And 1 year we got back, and I knew they had trashed stuff because my boxes weren't in order anymore. It looked like they had read everything. I think we had a ColecoVision. It had crackers all over it. I'm like, "You motherfucker, you trashed it. You could have at least kept things clean." But I knew they read a lot of comics because everything was out of order, so it looks like they had a party and read a lot of my comics, which was fine. But none of them at that time that I know of were ac actively buying comic books besides myself. And if I did have friends that were, I wasn't close to them. So then I graduated college and got a job and moved to Colorado. And the first stop, what was it called? Gotham City was the first comic shop I went to. And I had a pull list there. And this was about the time that Acclaim was going under, I think. And they started missing books for me. And I got, and it was kind of far from where I lived. We lived in an apartment at the time. And then I switched to a place in the mall, which was right across from where we lived. And I liked that place, but I knew it was at risk. Like, this guy liked to sell comics and he liked to read comics, but mall comic shops don't often do very well because of the cost of what it takes to be there. And I knew I had to leave that place. And I don't even remember what that place was called. I have no idea. I don't remember the name. But I was there for a brief, I think it was a year and a half. And I could see the writing on the wall just because my pull list looked kind of funky. I was missing books again. And then I moved to a Mile High Extension, even though it wasn't in Denver. And I don't know how this guy worked the system, but it wasn't really owned by Mile High, but he distributed through Mile High. And I even had Mile High invoices. And what was new and unique about this store is that you'd pay first, like you'd pay in advance. When you put your order form with previews, you'd pay. And then your credit card would be charged when they placed the order. And I was pretty happy there, even though I was paying in advance, I was guaranteed my books. But then this place started to, I saw the writing on the wall, and the guy that's there knew that he was going to quit, or he had to close shop. And he said, "You know what? I'm going to continue to do this out of my house, and you could continue to do your pull list." And stupid me, I gave him a couple $100 to pay for the next two lists, and I only got one shipment, and then it was done. I never got it. So I like lost money in that store. And that's when I found Ed's Cards and Comics. And I've been there ever since. And I never really had like friends to talk to until the internet. Even though there was one guy whose wife I worked with, and he collects comics, and he's still going to this shop, and he was buying one of those Spider-Man bundles, so I like know his slot number, and he told me he was buying the bundle. So I had him to talk about, but we were more into the sports, like we played softball together, and never really talked about our comics. Unless I was at his house and I'd go see his long boxes or whatever. And so that was a friend I had, but we never really. And then the Forum for Geeks and all this stuff started, and I met all the great friends I have today. And I was going to Ed's, and I was pretty happy at Ed's. Like, I love talking to Ed, and buying my comics there, and been going there a long time. Even when his ex-wife was working there, now they're separated. Seeing his kids get cancer and get over it, and seeing his kids grow up, and it's been, I was happy there, except with the back half of previews, he would miss a lot in my order, and it would start to get to me. So what happened around that time is I was listening to, I don't know if it was 11, no, it was an 11 o'clock comics. It was Around Comics, or maybe it was CGS. It was probably Comic Geek Speak. And they were talking about DCBS, and I'm like, wow, these discounts. And so what I did is I was looking at books I was missing, and I said, I'm gonna migrate some of these titles over from the comic shop over to DCBS. And from there, I love DCBS. I still love DCBS. So I get most of my stuff there, but I always stick to my DC guns at Ed's Cards of Comics, and I've never been disappointed there either. The discount isn't as great. I get a 25% discount, which is pretty damn good for a brick and mortar. Instead of like 40 to 50, but I've been happy there, and I'm happy with the distribution that I have from the different shops. So, I thought I'd talk about my journey through comic stores and what the titles of the comic stores were. I went, like, here in Colorado, went from Gotham City to some comic shop in the mall to Mile High Comics, and then to Ed's. And there's a lot of stores that are here. There's a couple stores I haven't checked out. There's one is called Noble, I think, and another one is called Cowabunga. No, what are they called? They're called something like that. And they're a coffee shop slash comic shop. I've never been there to check it out. There's Heroes and Dragons. That store is really nice, and I get my boxes from there because he's the only one that deals in drawer boxes that are proper, not BCW drawer box crap, but the actual drawer boxes that have the anchors and everything in it. And I go there for that. That's a nice clean store. They deal in gaming a lot. And then there's another one, which is downtown. They specialize in independence because they're near the college and stuff like that. So they get tons of that. And then they opened another one right by the movie theater. And they're a really clean store. They have a great trade selection, a great comic selection. If I ever miss anything, I'll go to that store and see if they have it before I check online. So I hope you enjoyed that journey. I have some questions, but I think I've already gone long on this episode, so I will get to the questions later. I want to thank you all for listening, and I'll be back with the weekly comics that I read, and we'll talk to you very soon. Thank you. Hello and welcome back. And I'm going to go over the weekly reads for July 31st of 2017 to August 6th of 2017. So for that week, I had 22 comics read, one Valiant, seven Marvel, one Dynamite, and 13 DC. What I see here is an interesting trend too. With the first one, I start with the 3 out of 5s, and I gave Black Bolt 1 through 3 a 3 out of 5, which means I just liked it. And I know where I ended up with the series, at least through issue 7 or 8, I started to love it. So my ways changed. And this just is a perfect example of sometimes you need to give a series longer than a few issues, and it might just turn into a winner. And of course, you could get the opposite. It might just turn into a loser, even worse than a 3 out of 5. But for this one, it really worked for me. So Black Bolt, number 1 through 3, I gave a 3 out of 5. And it turned out in something bigger for me. But this was Maximus is the brother of a Black Bolt who was imprisoned in the Inhumans Prime, switched places with Black Bolt. As Black Bolt escapes, he learns he can speak and no, this is weird. He can speak and no longer shatters mountains. He fights a Skrull, still powerless, seems like he'll be working with Absorbing Man and the Skrull, and they find their capture and get powers back to fight them. So that's the summary of 1 through 3. It turns in deeper than that, and I remember that Absorbing Man like sacrificed himself, if I remember correctly. But I don't think he's dead. I think he appeared somewhere else. So we'll have to see how where I'm lost with his history. So we got Azrael number 18. Yeah, this was his ongoing series, and I think what I was doing at this time was I was going through my comicshop.com box of books that I was missing from Azrael before I completed it, and I was missing number 18. And this was John Paul is trying to seek help from a scientist whose brother is in a cult trying to destroy them. The scientist is using Jean-Paul. So I gave that a 3 out of 5. Then I read Batman 165. There were two very interesting stories. God, did I include this twice? I did. So let's not. I that was in the previous episode. Somehow it got logged twice. I must have got confused. So we'll skip that. That was still a 3 out of 5, though. I was at least consistent. What I read last week, still a 3 out of 5, but it was Batman 165. There were two interesting stories. One, Batman was dealing with a mutant, the next step in human evolution, and the first appearance of Patricia Powell, who fell in love with Bruce Wayne. We then get into the 4 out of 5s, and we had the Commandee Challenge, 4 to 6. In 5, Willingham had gutted Commandee, but Orlando found a way to rejuvenate him. What the Commandee challenge is, so Commandee was a Jack Kirby creation, and it was kind of like the last boy on Earth living in a world where animals had turned into upright beings, and kind of like a Planet of the Apes homage. And the Commandee Challenge took after a comic book that was one of the first comic books the direct market put out that I bought. I don't know the proper DC Challenge. Yeah, it was DC Challenge. So the DC Challenge came out in 1985 and 1986, and this particular comic ran the same as the Commandee Challenge, which was 12 issues. And one of the things that was cool about this is it was one art writer and artist turning a story over and like ending it on a cliffhanger and then giving it to another set of writers and artists. Just like this was the Commandee Challenge was just like it was repeating what the DC Challenge did in 1985, which I think was pre-crisis. For the DC Challenge, like the first writer was Mark Evanier, which he was a really good friend of Jack Kirby, actually, and he started the writing. He did Crossfire for Eclipse and DNA Agents. That's what I really know him from. And he works with Sergio Aragonés a lot too. The artist was Gene Colan. Then we get into issue two of the challenge. I'm talking about Commandy Challenge, but I'm talking about the old issues. Who was writing these? Len Wein and Chuck Patton did the second story, and Chuck Patton did the art. On the third story was Doug Munch and Carmen Infantino. The fourth story was Paul Levitz and Gil Kane. The fifth story was Mike W. Barr and Dave Gibbons. The sixth story was Elliot S. Magan and Dan Jurgens. The seventh story was Paul Cooperberg and Joe Staton. The eighth was Jerry Conway with art by Rick Holzberg, Dick Giannardo, and Arnie Starr. The issue nine was Roy Thomas and Don Heck. Number 10 was Dan Mishkin and Kurt Swan. Number 11 was Marv Wolfman and Kerry Bates with art by Keith Giffen. Number 12 was a lot of those writers coming back: Mark Evanier, Dan Mishkin, Roy Thomas, Jerry Conway, Len Wein, Marv Wolfman, with art by Dan Spiegel, Dennis Cohen, Luke McDonald, Stan Walk, Steve Lytle, Ross Andrew, and Tom Mandrake. So what a hell of a creative team on DC Challenge. The Commandy Challenge, I gave a 4 out of 5 to, and I gave you the description, and that's what that was. It was a really fun series, especially if you have that nostalgic feeling for I don't know if you ever did that as like a elementary school or a junior high school project, where you would take a story and then try to end it, and then the other person would have to take that story and run with it and create whatever he wanted, and then he would hand that story off to another classmate. That's what the challenge is about, and that's what Commandy Challenge is. We then get into another 4 out of 5, which was Web of Spider-Man 118, 119, and Spider-Man 52 and 53. This was from the Clone Saga. Venom was trying to track down Carnage as a vigilante, Venom being stalked by a female Symbionite to help her gain control. Ben becomes the Scarlet Spider, invents the compression web balls. Kraven's son wants revenge. This is interesting because I know that Nick Wetmore is reading the Clone Saga, and he just finished the Kraven's son part of it and got into the Doc Ock. Ben captures Venom and turns him over to the Guardsmen. Reporter seeking to be better than the reports with the story on Venom, and he names Scarlet Spider. So this was a reporter that was trying to make his way and discovering Scarlet Spider and trying to use Scarlet Spider to increase his reputation as a reporter. We then get into a 4 out of 5 Justice League Task Force number 35, and this was a Warlord issue. On Skitaris, Ray decides to go after a guy raiding a farmer's village only to be manipulated into attacking his friends, and that is the Ray, because he was part of Justice League Task Force. We have Aquaman 22 through 23. This one is Aquaman and Mera return to Atlantis, only to find they are no longer want him as king. A new leader was in prison for leading the Deluge Wrath. Mera just returned to Amnesty Bay and live their lives together. Vulko freed, but does not leave Saul. Merc stabs Arthur as he tries to escape. The Crown of Thorns is released. Aquaman's believed dead. Mera is in Amnesty Bay. Aquaman reappears in the lower domain of Atlantis. There are mutants and meets Dolphin. Mera attacks Atlantis for revenge for Aquaman, Arthur. Really good story, 4 out of 5. We then get into All-Star Squadron number 4, and this is when I was reading the MyComicShop.com box. I was missing some of the All-Star Squadron, and this number 4 happened to be one of them. And this is JSA and All-Stars go to see what happened at Pearl Harbor. They go after Japanese, only discover they have the Holy Grail, and it is like the Spear of Destiny, and the ones with powers and magic go under their control if they're in the area. And Hawkman gets out of the area of influence. So that has the Spear of Destiny and the Holy Grail, and what that is it tries to explain the Spear of Destiny, why the superheroes couldn't just go into Germany and destroy all the Nazis and end the war, because if they did, they would become powerless because of the Spear of Destiny. We have Bloodshot's Day Off. This is another one that I covered in the previous one, and I don't know how it made it in here. So that's strange. We have Azrael number 47, which was the Road to No Man's Land. It's the origin of Nicholas Scratch. Scratch goes after one congressman that wants him to help Gotham and kills him. Azrael was sent to protect him. So he was sent to protect that congressman, but the congressman ended up dying. The next 4 out of 5 is Lone Ranger number 1, volume 2, from Dynamite Comics. And this is a man seeking a new start out west, loses his wife to a disgruntled employee. Lone Ranger and Tonto save his life. We then have a 5 out of 5, the only 5 out of 5 that week, which means I loved it, is Batman Shadow of the Bat number 80, Arkham and the Assistant deal with the situation in Arkham where they are running out of supplies because of the cataclysm. The senator that was going to help them was killed, and Joker switches the prescription around. And I think this is around the time that on Gotham by Geeks we were going to read No Man's Land, and then I read it all, and then nobody read it all, and we never covered it. It pissed me off. Don't give me homework if you're not going to follow through. Because I'm a mood reader, and you're changing my mood by dictating what I have to read, and then telling me, oh no, we're not covering it. So that was 22 books, but I think there were 2 repeats, so it's really like 20. And that was for July 31st of 2017 to August 6th of 2017. You can leave me comments at Twitter at Mike Myers Brunch, and please send questions anytime you feel like it about any topics or anything that happens in the industry and you want my opinion on. I'll be glad to answer them on this show. And also, you can reach me at the Facebook at Geek Brunch Podcast and click the like button and follow the episode threads there. And we're also at that website, geekbrunchpodcast.com, and that's where all the episodes are hosted, and you can leave comments there as well. And I think if you want to send me snail mail, well, email, you can send it to me at mike@comicbooknoise.com, and I will read it on the show. I appreciate all the comments and questions I've been getting. I still have a slew that I've collected, and I will be talking to them on an upcoming episode. This is going to be a quick release, and it's almost like two retrocasts. I mean, sorry. Mike M's weekly reads that were done in a row, and I gotta start recording the next one so I can have one or two in the can. So I'll talk to you soon, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. Bye bye.